Hello and welcome to the fourth edition of the Next Wednesday Instead podcast. We're a bit late this week because a certain somebody decided to go to another country.
Sorry.
Thank selfish. You, Dave. What a selfish twat. But yeah, this week we've got actually five new releases because it's been 10 days since the last time we did one, and there's been actually 2 weeks of releases. So we've got five to talk about, including The Social Network, which everybody's seen, and that's going to be the first time that's happened.
Bit of a miracle.
Oh, yes.
I know. We're actually a real one now, right? We can actually do it like it's supposed to be done, so that's pretty
exciting. The podcast has now started.
It has.
Three episodes
from
in.
This moment, it has become something we can be proud of now. No, it hasn't. Part two of it will be a talk about British cinema and the state of British cinema and generally why we think it all sucks as Brits, right?
Pretty much.
And number three will be a love fest about the films of Christopher Nolan, who is our choice in the filmography this week. And we will I'll tell you what, each one of us will try and find one negative thing to say about each one of his films.
Yeah.
As a challenge. Okay, so let's start. So the first new release I want to talk about, we'll do Social Network last so we can talk about it in a bit more detail, but the first new one I'm going to talk about is Despicable Me, which is by the creative team behind Ice Age, and it's basically an animation revolving around a supervillain who, through one of his schemes, adopts three lovable children and is somewhat redeemed, or they redeem him, rather, and, you know, hilarity ensues.
That tone you're giving right there sounds like you thought it was a bit rubbish.
Yeah, it did. I mean, the thing about it is, I think the storyline and the emotional arc, as it were, is very manipulative, very, like, gooey, and I wasn't crazy about that at all.
So,
but
what do you think is going to separate it from Megamind?
See, they do seem basically like the same movie. I think Megamind seems a little bit more Shrek-y than this was. This was had a bit more of, perhaps, a soul than that film will. And, like, the stuff between Jason Segel's, like, upstart villain and Steve Carell, I actually quite liked. And it was very Looney Tunes-esque, but that kind of, it had, like, crazy action of it. I kind of enjoyed, but, like, it was way too sentimental. Like, again, like Ice Age is in a way.
I really like how sentimental Ice Age is.
I mean, this is the thing. It's
Maybe I'm just a big
audience seemed to support it as
girl,
well. It just
yeah.
I really like Ice Age. I think it's one of my favourite CGI
animations.
Films.
Well, outside of Pixar, anyway.
I really like The Incredibles.
Yeah,
I really liked that, and I think that seems quite similar actually. To what
the thing about it is, it's like I don't mind sentimentality, but this I think seemed to go one step further than Ice Age in regards to the children, and they were all so ridiculously sweet. I guess the youngest one was a little bit funny as well as just being like something to go aww at, but it just I wasn't crazy about
the cynical
side
of Louis hates children.
Yes, basically that is the message to take here.
What was the response in the cinema?
Everyone loved it. Yeah. It actually got a little bit of an applause at the end. And like I said, it's a very fun movie. The animation style is very enjoyable. It's kind of like, again, like I say, it's like it's not perfectly realised, but it's got its own like charm to it. It's a very charming movie in that respect. And there's a lot to enjoy, like particularly the action scenes and the rivalry between Carell and Jason Segel, both who are quite good in it. But, you know, it's fairly... kind of
it's
average for this kind of thing.
It's
a pretty solid 6 out of 10 movie. It's a bit too icky for me.
Anything surprising, or is it exactly what
it's
you
exactly what
to
you'd expect it to be. But, yeah, that's not the worst thing in the world. And it's an enjoyable kids movie. I have no
kids
problem with seeing
this.
Kids
want things that are exactly what we expected.
Exactly, and I think this is the kind of kids film that's going to encourage imagination rather than detract from it, like Shrek 3. So that in that respect, I think it's a good release. But we'll move on to Red, which is a release from this week. And what do you guys were expecting?
Why haven't we
Red?
Seen that? It's got... old people with guns.
That seems like the whole... It seems like if you've seen the trailer, you've seen the film.
Literally, that is...
Helen Mirren with a 50 cal. Like.
That's the... If you were to define this movie, if you see the trailer, you've seen the movie.
Malkovich makes me want
to
see the
you've
film.
Got the sight gag of Malkovich holding a gun at that woman, and that's all you need to see. And that's this movie, basically. It's very, very lazy. It basically knew that John Malkovich with a gun is so intrinsically hilarious, it doesn't actually have to be.
How high is Morgan Freeman on the humble scale in this one?
Oh, he's barely in it, actually. I have no idea why Morgan Freeman took this role. He just kind of comes in for, like, 20 minutes.
That's a shame. Maybe it should have just been Danny Glover instead.
Yeah, I think it feels more of a Danny Glover role. Although, is that your own action movie wishlist kind of...
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah.
Well, he's too old for this shit.
Yeah, he is too old for this shit, as everyone in this movie is. And that's kind of the joke, and we can all... You know, it's very winking at the audience. And
I did see a clip with a fight between Bruce Willis
and
Carl Urban, which looked quite good.
So some of the action, I guess, is alright, and that fight was fairly kind of... But, yeah, I've seen that kind of thing done more interestingly before, and the story for this, the plot is pathetic. There is no other way to describe it. It's just really wrote it in 10 minutes kind of lame, and it just... There are scenes with John Malkovich and Helen Mirren maybe that are funny, and John Malkovich in particular, I would say, is kind of saves the movie, even though he clearly doesn't give a shit. He's kind of funny enough, despite not giving a shit, to make it okay. But Bruce Willis is is very, very bored, very uninterested in this film. As he has been in a lot of his roles, I think, recently. He just kind of checks it in. It's been a while, I would have said.
Yeah. I can't think of anything that I've seen him in recently where he's had that same, like, kind of fun energy that he had in something like Die Hard.
Exactly, and there's no enthusiasm here at all. He's going through the motions to the extreme. It's like when you see him in this, you see him in Cop Out, you see him in Die Hard 4, there's just no life in the performance anymore.
It's a real shame.
It is, and this is probably the worst example of
maybe
it.
He needs a serious drama and not these kind of
he does. It's dumb almost action movies. It's like I read a description online in one of the reviews I've read where basically like Bruce Willis acts as though he's already won the movie game, but he'll keep playing just to appease his audience, but he doesn't need to try anymore because he's already won. And that, I think, is a pretty apt description of his performances in recent movies.
Well, let's move on then.
That film, very disposable. If you really love action movies, see it, but otherwise, yeah, we'll move on. To Paranormal Activity 2, which I think we're probably going to talk about the least because it is basically the same movie as the first one. And
it got the massive release, didn't it?
It opened at $41 million in opening weekend, which is no Jackass 3D, to be sure, but it's still very impressive.
Maybe they made it in 3D, it would have gotten there.
It may be, because it's the 3D ticket. But yeah, no.
Like they've been using state-of-the-art 3D cameras in their house.
Yeah. Yeah, do you know what? That's the third film, I would think, so, you know, give it time. But yeah, it seems like all the same scares are used, the same, you know, drag down the corridor, you know, something is very slowly opening when it shouldn't after waiting 5 minutes for it to happen. I know that worked really well in the context of the first movie. Now that I've seen the first movie, I'm like, yeah, I already saw this.
You're literally watching paint dry. Scary paint.
It is, and you're not afraid of it anymore because that what made it scary has already been. They've already done their reveal to that like punchline, and now it's just seeing it again. It just doesn't quite work as well.
So, what is it? Literally the same story? Is it just a house that's haunted?
It's a prequel. I think more than anything else, which is weird because it's called Paranormal Activity 2, which implies a sequel. But it's
Paranormal Activity: The Beginning.
Yeah, that would be more an apt title.
So, has it got any of the same characters in it?
It has. Yeah, the Micah and Katie from the first movie show up in like cameo roles. Basically, it's about Katie's sister, like maybe a month before the first film took place in their own...
I see a link here.
Yeah, there is. There's a very, very trite explanation for the first movie within this one, and it kind of detracts from it in a way. And basically, I won't spoil it too much, but yeah, they have their own dealings with ghosts, and Katie and Micah show up, you know, in occasional scenes at, like, barbecues and parties and whatnot, and it just...
That's an unfortunate family.
Yeah, but the thing about it is, it's like, Micah in the first film, I thought was very, very irritating, and... This is actually family, I think, is a lot nicer and a lot more fun to spend time around. It's just that the horror movie part of it, the part of it that should be the most important, just really didn't work. Mm-hmm. So even though the characters are probably more likeable, the horror's just been done before by these same guys. Make something else. I don't know. Mm-hmm. I mean, what do you guys think?
I haven't seen the film, but I think from the sounds of it, you've really summed it up. And do you think this is Paranormal Activity franchise could end up becoming like Saw, where we just get one after another?
Surely they can't make too many.
I mean, it's so ridiculously profitable. I mean, they cost like what, $1.5 million to make, and it makes a $41 million opening weekend. That's
they will make a third. I bet you that.
Probably, but it's such a specific idea. I don't see how they can keep making it plausible and not ridiculous. But I guess they won't care if they make money, right?
Right, I'm bored of talking about it. Move on.
Yeah. Okay. Thanks, man. To final one before Social Network, I want to talk about is Easy A. Which I was actually a much, much greater fan of this movie than I was expecting. And
you gave it an 8.
I gave it an 8, which is the same review that I gave Social Network. And saying that now, that sounds kind of ridiculous. But actually, I would stand by that. I think it's in its own way, it's as good as The Social Network. It's very funny. It's very, like, witty. The script is great. And the performance of Emma Stone in the lead role. I mean, I've liked her before, but I've not really been crazy about her before. But she's really amazing in this movie. It's like felt like a breakthrough performance almost.
Could she get a nomination, do you think?
I would hope so. I don't think so.
Really? Is it really that good?
I think it almost is, yeah. Like as like a comedy performance, it's like it really stands out, particularly within like the teen movie genre. And it was very, very, very strong. And I would like to see her get an Oscar nomination for it, but she won't because the film doesn't deal with teen pregnancy, which is the only way to get a high school movie an Oscar nomination. But... No, it's very impressive. It's a really, really, really entertaining film to watch. I don't think that's the view of everybody in this country.
What have other people been saying?
The reviews in America are great, but I think the reviews in Britain are a bit more hands-off. They're kind of a lot of 6 out of 10s, 3 out of 5s kind of thing. Mm. But no, I really, really enjoyed it. And it might just be a subjective thing, because I enjoy high school movies that are intelligent.
Super liberal.
Yeah, it's very liberal and it's satirical in a way, because what happens is, like, Emma Stone's character is basically like, well, she kind of pretends that she's been sleeping around to garner a reputation, and then she just kind of, the school kind of turns on her, and she kind of owns that anyway, and just like puts a scarlet red A on her clothes, like she would be like the scarlet letter, like she's been ostracized by the community, and it's a satire for like the sexual double standard, and I like that a lot, and I thought it did it very well, and that kind of thing can be a bit intrusive on enjoying a film sometimes when it's trying to deal with ideas like that, but I really think it succeeded and made it entertaining.
Sounds good.
So do you think she's got a big career?
I think she does. I think if she gives more performances like this, I would see a film just because it had her in it, and she's really, really good. And it's like some of the supporting performances are good as well. There's a very cool cameo by Thomas Hayden Church, and Stanley Tucci and Patricia Clarkson are in it. And but overall, it's just a very witty, enjoyable, entertaining movie. And whether it's set in high school or not, that's something that's rare in like mainstream cinema releases, particularly like mainstream American releases, and particularly within comedy as well. And I'm very happy to see this movie. I wish more were made like it.
Cool.
Yeah, it's awesome. So we'll move on to now The Social Network, which we'll let you guys go first. Jamie, what do you think about The Social Network?
Oh, I thought it was really good. Yeah.
Nailed it.
This is why,
ladies and gentlemen, that's why you come here, for that kind of insight. So
I'll elaborate. I think what makes it really great is, obviously, Aaron Sorkin's script is amazing, but I think also the restrained direction of David Fincher. Mm-hmm. It's still stylish, and it still has those cool greens and blues and that kind of awesome visual style. Maybe a little bit overdone in the rowing scene, but overall, it really matched what the script intended, and it didn't treat you like an idiot. It was a smart film, and you had to be on the ball, I think. And afterwards, I remember when me and Dave walked out, we were really talking about it in terms of, wow, you know, can you imagine if the Winklevii got 65 million, how much did, or billion, whatever, how much did Thingy get? And we were talking about, you know, how true is this? And
yeah, well, it's widely announced it's actually kind of pretty much bullshit. But
except the costumes. Except Mark Zuckerberg said all the costumes are literally in his wardrobe that he wears.
But then again, he did have a girlfriend throughout
the entirety.
That's pretty much his big...
His whole character arc is revolved around being of loneliness, and the fact that he did have a girlfriend this entire time in real life does kind of undermine that. But anyway, David, what do you think about the film?
I agree with Jamie completely, apart from if we're going to criticise it for anything, I think it's just the general feeling that there's not really that much at stake. These are like rich kids suing each other. Do you know what I mean?
Maybe a relatability issue.
I think that it's their friendship that's at stake, and it's really quite clear throughout the whole film that how important that is to one of them and obviously not to the other one. And I think that's like the huge emotional punch, and I think you feel that.
I think I would agree.
And I think that's down to a brilliant performance from Garfield.
That I like the most about the movie. I mean, the Sorkin script is great, and like you said, David Fincher really doesn't do
going back to the David Fincher thing. Yeah. It looks really classic and awesome, doesn't it?
Very classily shot film. Yeah, and like for me though, I think it was the performances that made the movie. It was like a really, really character movie. And like Eisenberg, Jesse Eisenberg in particular, I think.
Oh, I thought it was just brilliant.
It was amazing. Just for that first scene alone, it's like you're watching that first scene, and it's just like there are scenes in cinema where you literally have your mouth open, and this was kind of one of those for me. It was just, he was so good, and the writing, and him delivering the Sorkin lines in the way that he did, it was like a really, really powerful.
He was really a convincing character when he could have easily just have been an arsehole, and he made it he made it more complicated.
He was a very, very good performance, and I think he will get an Oscar nomination.
He deserves to.
I agree entirely.
I don't know how many better male performances we're going to see this year.
Very few, I would imagine, but I don't think he'll win because he's too young to win a Best Actor Lee Oscar. Mm-hmm. You know, that seems to be a silly rule that they have, but he deserves it because it's such a layered, like, interesting performance. And I think, it's the most interesting Eisenberg has ever been for me. I've never seen him do this before.
No, I mean, he's good in other things.
He's good in other things, but it seemed like there was like such a like anger in the character, like a hate almost, like within him. That
this deep-seated kind of cynicism.
Resentment of everything. Yeah, it was really, really well communicated without having to say
his
it.
His anger at the lack of being able to be part of this like social scene.
Yeah, exactly. And there's the whole irony, this is a social networking movie where he doesn't understand how
it works. And the end is perfect.
The end is very, very strong.
And that character's perfectly kind of balanced with the Andrew Garfield
exactly.
character.
Exactly. I think he's kind of the, like, well, not the hero of the movie, but if you're going to root for somebody, you probably root for Andrew Garfield.
Yeah.
And his performance is very, very good as well. But
it's not as big a character, but as like for emotional involvement,
it's very dependable. I think it's,
I mean, he's
it's,
very naive, but you feel so sorry for him.
Yeah, and like the bit where he confronts Zuckerberg towards the end, which is Eisenberg's character, is again, it's very impressive.
Yeah.
It's a very well acted scene by Garfield, and he's great in it as well. I mean, it's a role that could have perhaps got lost
yeah.
in comparison to Eisenberg and Timberlake.
Exactly,
but
he
comes out very out of this very strong, which would bring me quite smoothly to my biggest objection to this film, which is probably Justin Timberlake. I don't know if you guys agree.
I disagree.
I don't think he's bad.
I don't think he's
as good as Eisenberg, but obviously he has less lines and less of a character.
But I remember when we came out, we were just, that was one of the first things we said, even though he wasn't as good as Garfield.
Yeah,
or
Justin Timberlake
is absolutely good, because I've seen him in other things where he's gotten, like, he got quite reasonable acclaim for his performance.
Yeah,
in,
he gets a lot of acclaim for Alpha Dog.
And I thought, I didn't see it all, I thought he was really bad in Alpha Dog.
Mm.
But in this, I thought, yeah, he really enjoyed it. He had like a, there was like a real sense of relish with playing
the
arse.
I got that
yeah.
as well, but it just seemed to me,
it was a confident performance.
It was, yeah.
It was confident, but it seemed to me like elsewhere the bar and is set so high, and like between Eisenberg and Garfield and like Armie Hammer, who plays the Winkelbein,
he was
very
really
good as well.
He did a lot with a little, I think.
He did. His performance was very good, but perhaps it's a little bit because of the character. He's kind of brought in as like a third act villain a little bit, and he's a bit of an easy like bad guy for the movie to take. And
I mean, he is a supporting character. I think
he is.
He gets a bit too much,
but
like just because he's Justin Timberlake, people are like focusing on him a lot.
Yeah.
Whereas
if it was a smaller part,
you'd still come out of this movie thinking that is perhaps the most interesting. I mean, it's not a massive part, but there's a lot that could be done with it, and I feel that undoubtedly somebody else would have given a better performance. And it just
I
don't know about undoubtedly. I think he did well.
He's good. I don't want to make it sound like I think he's terrible, but he just is below the standard of this movie. That was my appeal. The acting is so otherwise intelligent and classy that he seemed to almost go after it like it was not a villain in a lesser movie.
But his character wasn't intelligent and classy. Like it was. It felt to me like
no. He was a bit more.
The reason why it kind of worked was because the Sean Parker character. He just wants to be a rock star. And that's kind of what Justin Timberlake is.
And
that's why
that's
I thought it kind of worked.
Obviously, the casting and what he's
thinking
with this.
But
just,
that, do you not think that worked at all?
I didn't. His performance is not layered enough for such an intelligent. I know the character is vindictive and impulsive and all these things, but there's a way to do that is intelligent and more insightful into those attributes than this, where he just. I felt him reading lines, and I felt him doing things, and I felt him acting all the time. And I didn't feel that with Garfield and Eisenberg, and I feel those performances are much more natural in the way that they did it, and I don't think that's the fault of the character. I think that's the fault of Timberlake.
See, I think that's the fault of everyone else being so good.
Yeah, it could be. It could be that the standard set so high that he kind of falls by just being good.
Yeah.
And that is possibly what it was, but he felt like basically once he became an important part of the movie, it lost a little bit of its impact for me. I think the beginning, the opening 15 minutes is just like masterpiece cinema, and maybe the end again is very strong, but like the Timberlake.
How about a word for the soundtrack?
Yes,
which
do you want to
awesome? Yeah,
elaborate.
It's
on Trent, awesome.
Trent Reznor of Nine Inch Nails, and
it's very good.
It just matches the tone, just the visuals as well as the kind of the subject matter. It just perfectly. It was so It wasn't distracting, but when you did take notice of it, you were like, "This sounds awesome."
It does. It's like
well,
the sequence where at the beginning, where he's creating face match and it's intercutting with the party and the girls, and when
his
music
kicks
in,
that's the best
scene. I think it's
brilliant.
The best scene. It's an amazing scene, but it's like the Trent Reznor music comes in. It makes it almost like an action scene.
It was really exciting, wasn't it?
It's really riveting.
He's just
and it's
on
this
his
guy
computer,
typing, and it's like watching like.
It was almost like tension. You almost felt tension, but you weren't sure what.
It's great how they really managed to avoid all the kind of computer hacking cliches.
Yeah.
But they still managed to represent it in a really kind of exhilarating way.
I think what they do is just assume that most of the people watching these films know what the internet is, and they don't need to explain to them how to code because it's irrelevant.
It's
not really about Facebook, it's about friends.
Exactly.
There was a lot of times where I felt when they were talking and I didn't really know what they meant, but it just didn't matter because it wasn't about that at all.
Well, there's no like computer hacking montages or any sequences of
they
him
don't
putting
feel
up the
that
design
they need
of the
to patronise you by just showing a screen with a massive bar telling you what's happening.
And it just it doesn't matter. It's a film about these characters and their relationships with each other. It doesn't matter.
And that again I think feeds into the what I was saying about it making you it treating its audience with respect.
It does.
It assumes that it's the people that are watching it are smart.
It comes in, it's not going to wait for you. It's instantly, look, this is an intelligent movie. If you can't deal with it, that's your problem. And admittedly, that's very nice for all of us. But I have to say that when I was in the cinema with certain citizens of the City of Wandsworth, they weren't so happy.
They're a bit lost.
And particularly towards the end, they seem to resent the dialogue, because the dialogue is very, Dorothy Parker-esque wit, isn't it? It's very
stylized.
Very stylized, and they seem to, someone at the back started making fun every time there was a punchline. And
that's annoying.
It was annoying for me. It was very annoying for me. Basically, people seem to a little bit resent how unapologetically smart it was, maybe. What's your feelings on the female characters? Because this has got quite a lot of stick from various people.
I think the reason it's got stick from people is because there aren't really any female characters in it. Yeah. Which isn't really a fault of the film, it's just the subject matter, really. There weren't really any girls involved.
Well, they are computer
games. Facebook and in this kind of world, really.
Yeah. Brenda
Song as Andrew Garfield's girlfriend was a bit silly.
That's the character that's probably fueling the debate.
I think maybe I disliked her or thought she was a bit worse than Sean Parker, actually.
Yeah, she was just
Justin Timberlake.
She was just.
She was very minor.
She didn't get much screen time, and what she had, she was crazy, and that perhaps.
She started. I thought she started all right, but then they just kind of made her a bit stupid. They just kind of ruined her.
Yeah, but it was quite a funny scene. I thought
It was a funny scene, but it's certainly
maybe it was a bit of a sellout on her character for the film. I think that scene
actually felt a little bit out of place for me.
Yeah, it did.
It didn't like unimmerse me, or it didn't bother me too much. But I did think it was one of the weaker scenes.
So it's not quite Iron Man rapping to Another One Bites the Dust, but it's,
why do we
bring up Iron Man 2 a lot, by the way.
I do. Yeah. I really hate that movie. But anyway, it's very strong. Maybe the Rashida Jones character, I mean, the lawyer who he talked has very
and
talking
also
Rooney Mara. Yeah. Rooney Mara is very good. She's in the opening scene, and she's equally as good, almost as good. Well, not quite.
She really nails it.
Yeah, she's like a really strong performance in that one scene, aside from everything else. And I think
they're just looking for something to criticise because there isn't that
much. It's just because women don't play an important part in this story, therefore it's sexist. I mean, if there was a sister like shoehorned in or a female confidant, it would just feel like tokenism.
But, does it really matter? Like, why do they have to be represented in every single film? It doesn't.
And maybe the scenes with women dancing in their underwear and that kind of thing, and women as prizes. So, like, for example, when the women meet them and then they're like, oh, are you creators of the Facebook? Let me go and perform sexual acts on you in the bathroom stall. So maybe there's that kind of thing fueling the feminist
desire. You could definitely like get that from it, but I don't think that's.
I don't think it's a sexist movie. I think the character is misogynist, but mistaking that for the movie being misogynist is missing the point, I would say.
Yeah, I agree.
Think the Rooney Mara character just about kind of saves it from. I don't think you can criticize it at all, almost, because. It's not about that. That's not the real. Like it's got, even though it's taking liberties, it's based in some reality about three male computer geeks, and three male computer geeks probably don't hang around with that many women anyway.
Exactly. It's true. And like I say, if the women, there was a real effort to make them more like strong or involved in the story, it would have just felt forced, wouldn't it? It wouldn't have been organic.
Yeah, definitely.
So we give positive on The Social Network. What would you give it out of 10?
Out of 10. I think an 8.
I think an 8 was fine.
I think an 8 for me as well. Yeah. It's very, very strong, classy work, and it's like interesting film for Fincher to do, and overall,
very good.
One of my favourite films of the year so far, definitely.
Yeah, definitely.
I think that's a fair shout. So, that is a mammoth review session over, and we'll move on to part 2, which is the state of modern British cinema.
Wow.
And I've got written in my notes, why it is so shit. So why is it so shit, David?
Because they keep trying to make films about being British rather than just trying to make films about other things.
Mm-hmm. I'll tell you why it's shit. Because we don't control the world anymore.
It's true though that historically we've got a pretty decent.
It seems that at some point they realised that they don't need a film industry because
like a recent thing. It's not like we haven't done good films.
Exactly,
before.
It's like in the 40s and 50s, even the 60s, we were making the films to the best of them. But now it's like, how many wide-scale British releases do you get in a cinema a year?
And maybe I think a lot of British talent as well knows this and is just going over.
They
to
just
America
go to America instantly, don't
what's
they?
What's the
really
point? You know,
it's like you could Ridley
it's
Scott,
like if you have ambition,
Christopher Nolan.
You know, you're out of place in the British.
Yeah,
cinema.
It's not about telling stories in a way, is it? It's about a culture, and we're too stuck up in portraying our national identity that we forget to make movies
exciting. It feels like every movie has some kind of, like every British film has some kind of thing written in the, like a clause in the contract just saying, it has to encapsulate some kind of
British. Do you not think that's because the British film industry, they kind of realise that people are watching American films for those things, so they think the only way to sell British films is to make them really British.
Yeah, maybe, but they're wrong, because originality isn't copying American films and in an original way, or doing a British film. It's just making films. It should be irrelevant.
Just tell a story.
It should be irrelevant. If you're trying to sell something, things like that are never
irrelevant. You see like Portuguese horror films and like Japanese kind of weird, like, it doesn't matter. Like, it's just, it shouldn't form it. And it does. Absolutely. And it's such a shame, I think.
It's a very good point. And it's such a frustrating industry, because there are so many talented people. If you look at the amount of British people that have won Oscars and like the best actors.
It's not even like the directors, the actors. It's all the like smaller crew. Like in Hollywood and stuff, it's filled with like focus pillars who are in British and stuff like that. Like, movie crews are generally quite often quite British.
So
it's not like, if you want to make a good career out of film, you don't stay in England.
You don't. You get the hell out.
Unless you're willing to boom up on EastEnders.
I mean, the thing is, if you go to France, right? France probably spends about the same amount on film that we do. It's like every week there'll be a new French release, like in the cinemas, like up there with, you know, Iron Man 2.
I mean, just look at like Meyrine, for instance, exactly. The Vincent Cassel crime thing.
Yeah.
Would we ever do anything like that?
No.
Bronson was quite like that.
Bronson was Swedish though, wasn't it?
It's by a Danish guy.
I
think it's a British made film.
Maybe, again, British money.
It really didn't.
But anyway, I think
feel like a British film at all.
Which is like more British.
But that suggests, if you said, do you know that for a fact that France have more money? I don't know the same amount of money.
But I mean, their films aren't
have the same amount of money. They have the same amount of money as us. And surely that just means that the talent in England isn't that good.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like French people make films in France, and the good French directors stay in France, and the good French writers. It seems like the best people in the industry, like we say, they go to America.
But there must be a reason for that. That is, if they're getting the same amount of money.
America doesn't need to sell its national identity because it's already done it, so it can just make movies, you know?
Yeah.
For the better or worse, you don't get too many movies about, like, the whole national identity working class thing. Are we necessarily saying these films are bad, though? The Mike Lee and the Ken Loach?
No, they're not bad films. They're good films, and, like, probably internationally, they're well-renowned, but I don't find them interesting. And I think a lot of young or the kind of up-and-coming British filmmakers and people interested in film don't find the subjects in these films interesting.
So
they play to an art house middle class.
I don't think it's Ken Loach and Mike Lee who are the bad guys in the. They're some of the best things about the British film industry.
Yeah.
It's all the rip offs and it's all
Well, the my like objection.
It's Nick Love.
Nick Love. Nick Love's a rip off of Guy Ritchie. Guy Ritchie's a rip off of everyone else.
This is the problem with British cinema more than anything else.
Nick Love is the problem with Britain. It's Nick Love.
It's Nick Love. It's all Nick Love's fault. It just seems that when we have a film that's like successful and breaks them all, like Four Weddings or Lock, Stock and. Or like even Trainspotting, it just seems like
we have to mimic that.
We'll just mimic that until 2065.
It's almost pathetic and desperate, isn't it?
It's kind of like it is. It just, we won't try and make anything new. It's financially motivated in a very cynical way.
Yeah.
And it just, there's no ambition there to make good movies. There's an ambition to make money. So if something comes out that is a success,
can I just point out that there was Slumdog Millionaire and now there's Africa United, which is almost exactly the same story. So it's like. Why? It's almost ridiculous. I laughed when I saw they made a film which is the same story of Slumdog Millionaire,
just in Africa.
But in Africa.
Yeah. Like,
what
this is how we roll. We're worried about doing new things, so we just do things we know are successful until people literally can't tolerate it anymore.
Yeah.
And that kind of happens about 10 years after. So we basically had Guy Ritchie rip us and like with usually starring Danny Dyer.
And luckily,
until about 2007.
They're starting now. Even 2010. We're starting to get less of them.
And there was like a spurt of horror comedies after Shaun of the Dead as well. There was like Severance and there was like a few others, again, usually starring Danny Dyer. And it just... the landmark of British cinema is Danny Dyer.
Common lowest denominator, Danny Dyer.
Oh, God. Danny Dyer as well. Yeah. Danny Dyer and Nick Love.
Danny Dyer.
Killed Britain.
They're not exactly, you know, Scorsese and De Niro, are they?
No.
His muse, Danny Dyer.
Yeah. But there are, I mean... I guess Danny Boyle still makes
Danny Boyle
British films.
Shane Meadows, we should mention, makes British films, but not so much anymore. It seems like he's gone down the Ken Loach road.
What about Neil Marshall?
Yeah. I literally think The Descent is the best British movie of the last decade, and I'm not even going to apologise for saying that.
What I think is a shame, and I'm going to talk about Centurion, which me and Dave watched recently, is Centurion is a British film, and it is a Roman kind of epic and stuff, and potentially there's, you know, it could be good.
It could have been a good British film because it was different. It was a sword and sandals epic. Yeah. We don't usually do that, but this is crap. So
it was crap.
Did you not enjoy McNulty being ridiculously over the top?
Dominic West is
not
terrible.
Not enough to care though.
Dominic West is terrible in Everything But The Wire.
He literally is. His movies are
awful. I kind of agree with that.
But I think everybody was, even Michael Fassbender, who can all agree is a very good actor, is just very cheesy.
It's a terrible film.
The script was appalling.
It's terrible.
They had to get Noel Clarke in, obviously, because it's not a British film.
That brings us on nicely to Noel Clarke, who we should talk about.
Just briefly, I just wanted to say one more thing about Neil Marshall, is that it seems like he can only make films about five people in the wilderness trying to survive against some kind of monster. I mean, that Dog Soldiers
really
and the Descent.
You could take structure from The Descent and just apply it to Dog Soldiers and Centurion.
But the minute you tried to be more ambitious with, like, Doomsday and then Centurion, although Centurion did end up being
that
movie as well.
Centurion is a one-by-one.
Pretended it was about something else for the first 15 minutes.
Yeah.
It doesn't seem like he can do it. But like I said, The Descent is an amazing film. I don't want to take that away from Neil Marshall. And it's, like, the most daring British film in terms of what it did and how well it did it in recent my memory, as far as I'm concerned. But yes, we'll move on to Noel Clarke, who you want to murder, pretty much, right?
I don't
want to
murder him at all.
I
don't want to shank that boy.
We should mention that we're white, so we're not really allowed to make jokes.
No, but the point is that kid Owen and adulthood are almost embarrassing.
They brought shanking to the mainstream.
But I think it's cliche.
They're just not as good as everyone says they are.
People like celebrate Noel Clarke as being this original young voice of British, and in what I find quite a patronising way, like as though the energy that he makes them with, and to an extent his blackness, I think is kind of
it's fair point.
I think it's really
looking for someone, and he's quite appealing.
Yeah,
but
it doesn't really matter how good he is.
Isn't it?
Yeah,
it seemed like when 4-3-2-1 came out, and it was just basically he ripped off Tarantino in a way that
and it got a free pass from critics. Even
it did.
Though it wasn't
everyone
very good.
It really wasn't. It was really bland and badly written. But it just he's trying to do something original and new.
But now we're starting to criticise British filmmakers for trying to do something that we.
This is the thing. Yeah. It just seems like.
But we can't win though.
Maybe
we can't make films.
We want
that
them to be
British.
New, but it seems like the kind of new films they go for are what Hollywood or someone else was doing 15 years ago. Mm. So it's kind of like that thing where you get like a delayed news report. So it's like if you get the aliens get reports of how the world is in 1970, they come back here thinking everyone, you know, looks like Burt Reynolds. It just seems we're way behind the times in what we try and do is what's new and original.
Yeah.
And it's,
I mean, to stop trying to follow and emulate America or other successful,
we just need to
just
form
do
our own
we
identity.
To, yeah.
Exactly. It's not so much that we don't know how to make good movies, because like we say Mike Lee and Ken Loach, it's that we don't know how to entertain.
Yeah.
It's like we don't know how to make movies that are entertaining.
We can just make movies that are worthy.
We can make worthy and like
kind of,
we can do the Iranian cinema kind of, it's great, but I'll never watch it more than once.
Yeah.
But we don't know how to make movies like that are entertaining.
But they need to be that as well. They need to be good as well.
And you don't necessarily need money to be entertaining. It's like the amount of American films that like Kiss Kiss Bang Bang is like $15 million, and that's, we could spend that on a movie.
Yeah.
But we don't know how to make good entertainment movies, and that is the crux of the industry, one would have thought.
Yeah.
And because of that, we just got nothing to contribute, you know? I don't know.
I mean, the UK Film Council got axed, didn't it? So there's nothing. I mean, financially, it's in such a bad state now that they're just not willing to take risks at all.
Yeah.
And it's going to be worse in the next decade,
exactly.
Isn't it? Because they're going to really shut it down and only go after big successes.
We just need an anomaly, you know, someone to turn up.
We do. We need a British filmmaker to be amazing and stay in Britain.
We need
like a
Howard Hughes billionaire British filmmaker who revives the British film industry.
Some crazy
eccentric.
Posh,
this is an interesting question. Why, when we're making low-budget Britain, can we get like people like Rachel Weisz or people who've gone to America and been successful to come and be in these films?
Mm.
Like the ones that would get them a release.
Yeah.
It seems like if we wrote and if we put energy into making good movies in that respect, we would be able to get many of our talented people to come home to make it. It's like when Monica Bellucci is successful in Hollywood, she continues to make Italian films. It just seems like when one of our guys break out, they just don't look back. They're just like, right, I'm out of there.
Fuck that.
I'm done with that stuff now, yeah. And
I mean,
that,
Daniel Craig a bit.
Daniel Craig's made a couple of attempts. But again, what British films has he been in since he's become Bond? That
yeah,
been
I
good?
Mean, why, if you're in his position, why would
Flashbacks
you bother?
Of a Fool, yeah.
If you're in his position, though, why would you bother? Why do you care?
There's no need to. There literally is no need to. If you're not going to, if British films...
It's like, let's say you get, getting all, every day you're getting loads and loads of scripts, and they're all American big interest, like kind of ideas, and you have to go through them, and there's shit ones, but they're all doing something big because you're Daniel Craig. You're getting all these big movies.
And they're going to pay
then,
you more money.
Then you get another one.
I mean,
that too, obviously. And then you get a script from Britain that's just a British film.
Yeah.
Why do it?
The only reason that it could possibly have is to think, because that's what we should be doing. If we make them good, these great actors that we have, we have more great actors per generation than almost any other country, I would have said.
Yeah.
They would come back for these films, and that would make the industry thrive. But we just don't put a stock in doing anything remotely close to daring. And for that reason, it's just drowning.
We're getting one really good film a year.
We do.
We're getting one really good film every 10 years, sorry.
Yeah. I mean, it's like if you were to name your, say, top five British films of the last 5 years, would you be able to do it?
No.
Right now.
Like, can I even name thinking? Five British films of the last 5 years?
I mean, Fish Tank, I liked a lot.
I haven't seen Fish Tank yet.
Red
Riding,
Four Lions maybe?
Red Road was quite good.
Can we include Red Riding?
That's TV really, isn't it? Four Lions.
Dead Man's Shoes.
That's not 5 years.
Is it? It may just.
It
was 2004.
Was it?
Yeah. I'm pretty sure it's 2005. Maybe it's 2005.
All right, we'll give it anyway.
Yeah,
even though
one was being particularly pedantic, one would point out that 2010, 9, 8, 7, 6 is 5 years, and that 5 or 6 years ago. But I'm not going to do that because I'm a nice guy. So, yeah, are we optimistic? Is it going to change? Is it just going to be like this forever? What, are we in an unstoppable rut?
Who cares?
Well, we should probably care.
We should care. Because we should mention that we're all film students, all hoping to go into this godforsaken British film industry. But yeah, it just seems almost like it's broken, and it's too chicken shit to do anything about it. And I mean, there's good British films, there's good Mike Lee films, occasionally.
Yeah, we're not saying that they're bad films.
There's just not enough of them.
It's not enough, and there's not enough that are reaching mainstream audiences.
Yeah.
It just seems like there should be British films in the cinema every week in Britain.
Yeah.
And there's not.
Absolutely.
So, yeah, I mean, does anyone else have anything to say on that matter?
Oh, I think we've covered it.
I think we can
a nice example of a British film director who got the fuck out of Dodge as soon as possible, which was Christopher Nolan, and he made Following, which is a British film, and then he
made that for $4,000, didn't he?
One of the only British film DVDs in my collection.
Yeah. I've got The Descent and maybe Shaun of the Dead, and maybe Fish Tank, but that's probably about it from recent years. But yeah, Following, it seems like a rough sketch of what makes his later films great.
Yeah.
So the ideas are
there. It's like a trial run almost.
It is. It's like the ideas are there. It's a bit rough around the edges, and like I wouldn't say the acting is particularly amazing, but
it's not great. It's not great. But at the same time, like when you watch his other films, you really get a sense that this is from the same guy.
Again, it's that ideas, like strong dealing of ideas, that
and
he's
it's
always
ambitious
there because
in
movies.
A really low budget confined.
Yeah, it's like it's quite visually stylish.
Yeah,
if I remember seeing it, it was like I was impressed, but it was more like an intriguing movie.
Yeah.
It was like Pi maybe. I think Pi is a better version of it, but
I can definitely see similarities with Following.
Yeah, they're both like without a lot of money, they both made an effort to make it look interesting. And it's a neat little thriller, and it's like a template for what he would later do before. I mean,
exactly.
Okay, thanks, man. So we'll move on to what I imagine, although maybe it could say Dark Knight, but Memento is definitely, I think, his best movie.
It's amazing.
It's amazing. It literally is one of the best films ever made, as far as I'm concerned, Memento. It's amazing.
It's funny, I was doing some research for something, I can't remember what, but I was reading some reviews of Memento. When it came out, Empire only gave it 4 stars.
Yeah.
And I know, not just the reviews in general were quite, they were good, but they weren't.
So it's of equal value of Transformers Revenge of the Fallen.
Exactly. But the point is, it's strange how when it came out...
Twilight Eclipse.
we can rip on Empire all day.
Empire sucked.
What was he saying? Oh, yeah. So when it came out, it wasn't like, people kind of just saw it as like a cheap trick, the whole idea that it's in reverse. But now, I think it's kind of really gotten the acclaim it deserves, I think. I think it's now widely, like, people have seen it again, and just thought, actually, that was really, really genius. Like,
And the first time you watch it, it's like, it's that weird feeling that you get with hardly any films, where it's just kind of,
what have I just seen?
Yeah, it's amazing. Like, the thing, when I first watched it, it literally was like, I've seen something amazing. I have no idea what it is, but it was
amazing.
I wanted
to watch the whole film again.
I
think I watched it again the next day.
I think I did as well.
Yeah.
Well, I first saw it when I was 10, I believe, or maybe 11. So obviously, it's like I'm watching it. I'm like, I have no idea what's going on because I'm 11 and I'm in primary school, but it was really, really, you can tell it's an amazing
movie. It's like in the film, the first time you realise how it's doing things, when you work out the structure and it starts to make sense. It's so satisfying.
It literally is. It's like it's watching Genius at work, but it's always been there the whole time.
It's one of those films that is like that now we're talking about it, I just really want to watch it.
I know, I really do. I'm psyching myself up to watch Memento.
I love it.
Guy Pearce in this movie. It's a really underrated performance, I think
he's brilliant.
He's like amazing.
And he spends so much of the film on his own, like without anyone to bounce off.
He does. He has to carry it basically himself a lot of the time. And I mean, Joe Pantoliano was maybe good, but he's just doing the thing he always does. But I think
he is Cypher.
He's Cypher in everything he's ever been in. And Carrie Moss is alright. I think she's her performance I'm not particularly crazy about. But
she's okay. She has one really good scene.
She does have one really good scene. But I think Pierce is just, it's one of the better performances of the last
decade. So good. And it's a shame we don't see him in more stuff.
I know, this is what I'm saying. It seems like when people talk about Memento, people talk about Christopher Nolan, but he is an equal part into what makes it work as well as it does.
I think for that role, you really need someone that you can invest in, and I think a large part of that is the performance.
Exactly, if that's Josh Hartnett, that film just isn't working at all.
You can say that about every single
Josh Hartnett. Imagine that film directed by Brett Ratner with Josh Hartnett.
That would be a master. No, it wouldn't be terrible. But no, yeah, it's like a real landmark performance that works, makes the ideas, and what is a very complex structure of things that could have easily fell apart if one element.
I think it is
work.
Because the film is so kind of interesting and different in every other way that you kind of. Your attention's taken away from how good.
Yeah, mate, I think it is the fact that it's so original when you see it, and the idea is so unique.
What an amazing performance.
Yeah, you don't. You think go, about, oh my god, my mind
is. Well, it's one of those films where you watch it and you are appreciating, you know, different parts of it.
Yeah.
Each time you see it.
Exactly. So I think rewatches, you kind of realise how good Guy Pearce is.
It's very rewatchable.
Yeah.
It is the like perfect rewatch.
You can literally could watch
it's
this
not,
film
it's
forever.
Better. It's
I think you can even
it.
Say that for pretty much all of his
it's
films.
It's a certain quality. I think maybe if you watched Insomnia a few times.
Yeah. Really... Well, let's move on to Insomnia. Yeah.
So this is pretty much considered, apart from Following, it's pretty much considered to be his weakest film.
But it's still good.
But it's still good, yeah.
I haven't seen it.
I think it is kind of a fairly generic Hollywood thriller, just done by Christopher Nolan and better than most of them.
Yeah, I think it would actually, if it wasn't done by him and it wasn't Al Pacino and Robin Williams, I think it actually would have been probably bad.
Yeah. I think it contains average, the only like, good Al Pacino performance of the 2000s.
He's really good in this,
yeah,
isn't he? I really like him.
He's very, very, very good, and he's like... He doesn't do the usual modern Al Pacino, you know, the Heat performance where he yells everything and he's over the top all the time.
Yeah.
It seems like he actually acts.
And Robin Williams is in it and he doesn't do Black Preacher voice.
Exactly, he's very good as well. Robin Williams is like so much better, particularly recently when he's being terrifying.
He's
than when
creepy.
He's being
creepy. One hour photo,
he's very good. And he's very good in this as well, I thought. And him and Al Pacino work very well together.
I think they use the setting of Alaska and
it looks
stuff
yeah,
very well.
That is
like,
kind of.
Have you guys seen the Swedish? Is it Swedish original?
Stellan Skarsgård. I've not seen it, but I've heard of it.
Because I heard it was better.
I'm not sure. I mean, from the reviews that I read, they seem to roughly be around the same.
Okay.
But that
is it an Infernal Affairs Departed thing? Where you have your own favourite.
Yeah, I think it might be a little bit like that. But it's an interesting, like, very accomplished movie. You can tell he's a great director by this movie, even if it's not necessarily his best.
And you have to remember, this is his third film as well.
Exactly.
After Memento.
You'd think it was someone like much, much further along in their career who made it.
Is it? So then our standards are just too high and it's actually quite good. But...
Maybe he should have come up with Insomnia first, then Memento.
Yeah, but if this guy didn't have Memento, The Dark Knight and The Prestige elsewhere on his CV, this would be a very respectable best movie
Absolutely.
For a normal director. But the fact that it's so otherwise impressive, it kind of makes you like rag on it a bit. But it's very good. I can't think of a complaint to say why you don't watch Insomnia off the top of my head.
It's a very watchable,
very accomplished
good film.
It's very well done, yeah. And it's, you know, it's surprising, it's immersive, it's just like it's quite stylish as well, so probably recommended. So Batman Begins. Can we possibly
he takes the reins from Joel Schumacher?
He does, from the great Batman and Robin.
To be fair, he had a nice platform to improve on, didn't he?
Yeah,
like it was like
it was, at the same it was, time I didn't feel like he was taking it, you know, it was kind of it was an easy movie. I think
like, was still, it wasn't an easy movie because it's always a Batman film and that brings its own expectations, but because Batman and Robin happened, it was kind of like
after that film, just literally you could just buy a Batman costume and get a DV camera and you'd make a better film.
When it came out in the cinema, I remember thinking, oh, I don't really care, Yeah. I think that's because of Batman Robin, because Batman's awesome. Like, the character is awesome.
Yeah. Well, Batman, and that's why Batman, and this film reminds you that.
Exactly, awesome, because it is all about Batman. It's like the only Batman film, actually.
It literally is. It's the only, like, with Christian Bale, it's like, you see this movie, Christian Bale's performance is the best thing about it, and you can't say that about any other Batman movie.
They're always boring, the Batmans.
Like, it's just like, yeah, the Batman's there, but we'll get a cool villain, and that'll be awesome.
Yeah.
And just, this one actually tells that character's story for the first time.
And it has those really kind of Nolan-ish traits to it. This, like, you know, psychology, like, the kind of... I don't want to get too filmy, but you know that you can really see some of the kind of common themes in his previous films and throughout After Begins as well, and they're so clearly there, like like fear and kind of
Definitely. Is this the exception to the rule of comic book movies where if you have more than one villain, you're automatically awful? Because I think there are three.
But the thing is, they all get very little screen time compared to the usual villain, and that they had to do that in order for it to be a Batman film and not a Joker film, for instance. So I think, even if the three of them...
I think it might even be four, because this is like Ken Watanabe, Liam Neeson, Tom Wilkinson, and then Cillian Murphy.
Rutger Hauer's kind of a villain.
And Rutger Hauer saw it as well,
yeah. Yeah, okay, the five villains. But they're, I don't know, I don't think they're not like noticeably great, but they are...
Hit and miss. I would say Cillian Murphy is noticeably great, if you watch this movie and he's
I think kind of maybe not great.
I don't know. He's the best. And his little sequence is pretty much my favourite bit in the movie, I think.
Yeah.
I mean, he is the only one who's like a proper Batman villain, I think.
Exactly. Yeah.
But they had to
give also done in a way that's awesome and fits the universe.
It fits the universe, yeah. He was a bit more larger than life than, say, Liam Neeson, but he... didn't break the reality of Batman Begins.
But I think the whole, like, Batman Begins, if we just briefly compare it to Dark Knight, I think it is quite, like, over the top compared
to... Does Dark Knight ruin Batman Begins?
It's different.
It doesn't ruin it, but they are very different, I think.
Yeah, they're very different. Batman Begins feels like it's an entertaining movie. It feels like
a good summer Hollywood blockbuster.
Exactly, whereas Dark Knight just kind of transcends the genre. And
Dark
Knight's
like a terrorism film.
It's really...
You can really see that just by the settings of the films, because in Batman Begins they really try hard to create this comic book world.
It's a bit lighter, and like the heroes win generally. There's not really any... Apart from, like, obviously the backstory, generally he goes through...
There's a few more kind of funny lines, and it's a bit more like...
But it's, like, particularly noticeably with Alfred, whereas Alfred was pretty much, like, the comic relief in Batman Begins. Mm. And he has a little bit of that in The Dark Knight, but it's a lot toned down. He's a lot more of a serious figure in the sequel, but he's basically joking all the way through this.
Yeah.
So, it's very good. But again, does The Dark Knight ruin it? Can you watch it quite in the same way?
I don't think it ruins it. I think... It almost recontextualises it.
It does. I mean,
it makes you watch it slightly differently.
It makes me think of it as a lesser movie, I think. Just
but that doesn't mean that it... Yeah, it does. But at the same time, like, The Dark Knight is very good and Batman Begins is still good.
Yeah, I think that's probably a fair way to put it.
Okay, what's next?
So we're on to The Prestige. So, David, what are your feelings on The Prestige?
I actually really like Prestige. I think it's... Just to talk about the acting, I think it's my favourite Hugh Jackman performance, including Wolverine. And that's the only time he's ever tried to do anything other than... ripped Australian macho actor, and it really...
I haven't seen the Fountain.
And I think his and Christian Bale's performances are both kind of... I don't know. They're both two kind of quite subtle, good Nolan performances. Whereas I think he's usually kind of like much bigger ensemble performances.
Mm.
So it was interesting to see, like, the rivalry kind of portrayed.
Yeah,
in this, like,
I mean, the rivalry in this movie is very strong. Like, it really, really involves you in that dynamic, and it's very well done. It's like, I think I like Bale in the movie, but I think Hugh Jackman is the one you come out thinking, whoa, I was not expecting that.
Yeah,
and that's a very good performance.
Yeah.
I mean, I'd seen The Fountain before this, so I knew in theory he could be good, but I felt like an exception. He's very, very strong in the
movie. He's always been really likable, but in this I actually thought it was like a really good kind of emotionally resonant
performance. But again, like all Nolan movies, it seems like he spends a lot of time setting up the world, and he seems to do that better than he does anything else. It's like in Inception or Dark Knight, when he's setting out the rules, like exposition filmmaking, basically, he does it so greatly.
Yeah.
That, you know, when you're watching them work out the tricks.
With The Prestige, like the whole time, you don't really know where it's going, I don't think.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't want to spoil it, but it almost switches genres in a sense.
Yeah, it does.
Like, and it's... and when that happens, it throws the whole thing up in the air, and you kind of think, like, where is this going? Because I thought I knew, and I really don't know where, you know.
Yeah, exactly. Well,
and that makes it awesome.
It's always very jarring when, like, a film that's played in the real world suddenly, you know, like darts into, say, Supernatural, which it,
yeah,
well, more sci-fi, I would say, but you know, it does a little bit,
yeah,
and it still remains. It doesn't seem to detract from like the character stories or the reality of it.
But there is, I think, the main problem with Prestige is what is quite often the problem with Nolan films is the supporting female characters. Because I mean, Rebecca Hall's really good, but Scarlett Johansson, who's in it quite a lot, is.
Yeah.
I mean, it's kind of telling that the strongest female character in any Christopher Nolan movie is Carrie Ann Moss in Memento as a fairly generic femme fatale. So, you know, it's not as. I mean, maybe Marion Cotillard in Inception, actually.
And Rebecca Hall is good, but she's just good, such a small part.
The roles are very, very, very thin. Yeah. It's like Scarlett Johansson's in this movie, and again, why is she in this film?
It was bad casting.
Yeah.
I think so, yeah, definitely. I think maybe with a better actress, it could have actually been quite a good role.
Yeah.
I think it's an alright role done badly, whereas if you had a good actress in it, it could have been
actress.
One of the
stars. I think they're both better than David Bowie.
Oh,
I don't
Bowie.
Know.
I don't mind Bowie.
I kind of like David Bowie in this.
He's alright, he's kind of likable, but
he's going to play anyone, it's going to be a mad scientist.
It is going to be a mad scientist.
I heard that he, like, Chris Nolan was just like, I only want David Bowie for this. And I find it really bizarre. Like,
it's very strange.
Why did he think that he could only do this part? It just seems strange to me.
Maybe he was just researching Nikola Tesla, who was a real person.
And allegedly did just invent a lot
of
stuff.
He did, yeah.
And
just
totally
finding,
dicked
and
over
just
by
finding
Thomas
out
Jeff.
All these insane things about him, just thought Bowie. You know, Bowie's probably a figure from his youth anyway.
I think he loves Bowie and just wants to do it.
Yeah, I think that's probably more what it's like. So
what's next? A Christopher Nolan remake of Labyrinth?
I look forward to it immensely. Michael Caine, I want to say, because I think this is my favourite Michael Caine performance in Christopher Nolan films. There are many, but...
And he's in Alfred and...
He's in Alfred, except in Inception, where he's, like, in it for 5 minutes. But he's really... He feels like... I think he almost... like steals the movie. He has a character's job is basically just to tell you what's going on, but I don't know, it's like he really, really, he gives a really strong performance within it.
Yeah.
He
just has that screen presence, I think.
He does, doesn't he? He's like one of those actors you see him and like, oh right, I'm in good hands, you know.
He's got that he's got the same Morgan Freeman.
We always come back to Morgan Freeman. Freeman really is that kind of like standard setter. It doesn't matter what the script is.
Yeah.
When you see Morgan Freeman, you're assured.
He just relax.
I feel like Michael Caine and Morgan Freeman, they like read the script once or something, and then they just stand up.
Yeah.
I don't think they actually do any, like, they have to try at all. They just stand there and talk, and they're just amazing straight away.
Mm. Yeah, definitely.
Some people just have it.
Yeah.
But yeah, The Prestige is very interesting. Does it entirely work, or do you have anyone have your
reservations? I really like it.
I actually really like it, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Well, I think,
you
know, I mean, yeah. You could say it's kind of a bit, once again, cheap, twisty frills.
Yeah.
But I really like it. I think it works, and it does trick me. It's like another
it's
really
like
good...
And it's like you're saying, the tone of the world is just spot on.
It does.
And it's another good puzzle film.
He's
like,
very strong with plot, Christopher Nolan.
Yeah, exactly.
Great.
Yeah.
So we'll move on to The Dark Knight, which has
we've
been
briefly
presumably
talked about.
The Godfather, I mean, The Dark Knight.
Yes, because it's... Everyone, I should imagine there's probably more podcast talk about The Dark Knight than anything else in the history of mankind.
Mm.
But it's just amazing, isn't it?
Oh, it really is.
There's not much else to say. Well, we'll find other things to say
about
it.
We should talk about it.
Yeah.
His car's really nice.
His car's really nice, and he has awesome face makeup.
Yeah.
See The Dark Knight, guys. No, Heath Ledger is...
Is Heath Ledger good in it?
He's alright, you know. He's no. Like,
I don't even want to talk about it. It's just like.
He's no Arnold Schwarzenegger. Yeah. But he doesn't have nearly as many ice puns.
Ice to see you.
Yeah, ice to see you.
Cool party.
Cool party.
That film definitely needed some more neon in it.
It did, it definitely did. But no, it's like literally one of the best performances of all time, again, from Heath Ledger in this movie, isn't it? It's just like the perfect, like, larger than life villain. Almost.
Yeah.
He's just
astounding. He manages to make it larger than life, but somehow still fit in that Nolan
world. It really does. It's like really.
It shouldn't work, but it does.
But the character's literally is just terrifying. It's like it's very believable, and that almost what makes it more scary.
Mm.
And it's like
it's everything. It's like the physicality, mm-hmm. the way he moves, and way he kind of
it's like
limps,
if you were to
his voice, his. Just the way, like, his tongue, the way he licks his lips all the time.
It's a great physical performance. But, for example, if you were to watch it again now, it's like when I know there's a great Joker scene about to happen, I'm just like, oh my god, it's like the best moment of my life.
Well,
and
But that almost detracts from the rest of the film.
Yeah.
That's an interesting point, because when I watch it now, I don't just think, oh yeah, the Joker's back. I'm waiting for the Joker to come back.
Yeah.
And that kind of makes... So especially some of the stuff at the start.
I don't feel like that. Actually.
A little bit.
Is Batman irrelevant in his own movie?
Yeah.
Yeah, kind of. But
and that's the problem for me.
Yeah.
That's something that's they've undone some of the really good work of Batman Begins, and I'm glad they did because it's so good. Mm. But
it seems to me the story is Harvey Dent and the Joker, and those are the two main arcs going on here. Whereas Batman is kind of had his arc in the first movie, and he just kind of stays the same.
The villains have the story trajectory, and then Batman's trying to ruin
that's,
it.
That's so often the way with superhero films, isn't it? Like, the villains are the more interesting characters.
Yeah. And films in general.
I don't want to say that's a bad thing, because if we were spending more time with Batman and less time with the Joker and Harvey Dent, and I'd like to say that my favourite scene in this movie is actually Joker-less, and it's the final scene. We could spoil, but everyone in the world's seen The Dark Knight, so I'm not going to feel bad about spoiling this movie. There's the end scene with Harvey Dent in the deserted, exploded factory place is just literally my favourite scene in the movie. It seems that all the ideas at work come together with
the way that it
builds,
what it builds to as well.
Exactly, it's just great. And Eckhart doesn't get as many like
great accolades because everything else in the film.
It's so fucking dark.
It is. It's terrifying. So
it's just relentless dread, isn't it?
There was this quote that I read online where this movie is a kids' movie where a formerly sympathetic character is now holding a gun to an unarmed kid's head. And it's like, it literally is
the word for Eckhart, because I really like him.
He's great. He's really great. He's overlooked.
Because of the Joker.
Which is what the whole problem of the film is that he's almost too good.
It's the Ian Holman alien thing where you kind of forget about him because I'm watching the alien and John Hurt and Sigourney Weaver and forget there's this really great performance off in the corner. Aaron Eckhart, I think he does a lot of the hard work in this movie because he's got a lot of like emotional ground to cover, and that could have felt trite in different hands because there's a lot of changing very quickly. But he pulls it off.
Do you think he didn't get enough screen time as Two-Face? Do you think?
I was
ashamed when he died because it was a shame because I don't know. I would have liked him in the first film.
My thing about the Two-Face arc is that I think I would agree that it's not very well done, but it's saved by the last scene.
I can agree with that. At the same time, like, I think you could have the last scene and just a bit more between.
Maybe. But it just seems like as Two-Face is going around shooting fairly anonymous cops in the face, and then we get to the last scene where his big thing is. But,
it's a really cool idea, the idea that he's just out for revenge, but guided only by chance.
Yeah.
What's more awesome than
that? Although we should say there's that great scene with him and Heath Ledger in the hospital, which is... Again, one of the.
I think that's my favorite scene.
It's very, very strong.
You learn so much about both of them.
You do, because he's so emotionally powerful, and Heath Ledger's basically taking the piss out of him. And it's great. It's like really. It's hilarious.
He's quite arrogant.
As well.
He's a very arrogant character, I think.
He is. He's very, very conceited.
And that really kind of really lowers his position.
It does.
And him becoming Two-Face, he has to get back to that.
Well, it's like, he has to, it's like, when he changes the world, it's like, it's not necessarily about changing the world, it's about him doing it.
Yeah.
And it seems like he has the opportunity to continue to do good, he continue to make it happen, but now he won't get the credit for it. He can't live that way, and he goes into Two-Face. And I think that scene where the Joker's like, he shows you how pathetic your attempts to control things really are. That is exactly what you get from that scene. It's very well done.
And the action's fucking ace.
The action is fucking epic. The thing with this, do you know when they in the truck chase, the way he's in the lorry, I think that was amazing. Because a lot of people slag off Batman Begins for having shitty action, but
they improved it a lot.
Yeah, and it's like,
even
really
just the fist fights with Batman were a lot better.
Yeah.
You can't see what the fuck's going on in Begins.
Yeah,
I like the Batman Begins one where like they're fighting is it the Chinese government prison or whatever it is?
That's
a great fight scene.
A good fight, but when he fights as Batman,
it's just like you can't see him everywhere.
You can't see what he's doing the whole time, except maybe for the fight in the train with Liam Neeson.
Yeah,
but the bit particularly for me, which always stands out when I watch Begins again, is in the shipping yard where they're all surrounding him. And I know the idea is supposed to be that, you know, he's a kind of more than a man.
That bit was amazing. But he was like alien in that scene.
It's not that bit. The bit where he's picking him off one on one. It's the bit where he lands in the middle and fights them all.
No, I can't remember that bit.
But he's taking them out one by one, and then there's a few of them left, and he fights them, and you can't see what the hell's going on.
Yeah.
And not in a good way, I don't think. But
so they improve the action in the second one,
Yeah, in every respect.
Yeah.
It's just the first one set in a bigger reality with bigger ideas.
It's something that's more a reality as well.
Yeah.
I want to give a small shout out to Gary Oldman in The Dark Knight too, because again, it's a role you kind of forget about, but
we're going to keep doing this, aren't we?
Yeah.
And what about him?
And what about this? And what about this one makes it great? But no,
this was going to be the problem with Nolan, because it's a great ensemble.
It seems like he performs the Morgan Freeman role of this movie and just being the safe presence where you're like,
and Morgan
Gary
Freeman
Oldman's
is also in this movie.
Morgan Freeman is also in the film.
But Gary Oldman, is really, really
although
good.
I still want to see Gary Oldman do more Luke Besson.
Yeah, definitely. Awesome I want to see him be crazy. But it's kind of cool to see someone who's so often over the top be so restrained in a movie that's quite over the top. So,
so likeable in a non-manipulative way.
Exactly. It's like, but at the end, you care much more about his arc than you do Batman's.
Yeah.
It seems like the character is much more relatable.
But I thought as well the ending did bring it back around to Batman.
It did.
It made it more, you know, I thought that was a smart way to end it. They end it on the Joker. They end
the ending
it on
scene with the Two-Face, it literally is perfect for me, almost.
Yeah, it's the perfect ending.
It really is. Or maybe it could have been without the voiceover at the end, that's a little bit, perhaps.
But I think that's kind of a conclusion, in a way. Yeah.
But what are the feelings about it not really being a superhero movie? Is it just a crime movie, basically? Is it just heat with some
what
makeup?
Is a superhero movie?
Yeah, I suppose.
Yeah. I mean, it definitely feels like it's moved away from it. Yeah. Like you can see it with the difference between that and Batman Begins. Like,
it literally
it
does,
tries to like.
But that's a compliment, isn't it?
It is a compliment.
It's taken.
It just
a serious
tries to
drama.
Be great.
I know people who have problems with that though.
Yeah, there are people like, oh, but the Joker didn't come from a vat of chemicals, and therefore he's not the Joker.
It's like what people say about Casino Royale. I want gadgets, and I want like girls.
Where's
and I want
Q
his car
gone?
Yeah. Why isn't his car going underwater and stuff? Like,
yeah. Where's Moneypenny? No, I'm joking.
Yeah.
But yeah, I really didn't mind the fact that it moved away from the traditional. In fact, it made it seem more, and obviously by the money it made and the reviews that it got, people seem to appreciate that too, that it didn't just fall into these superhero cliches.
It's like The Godfather isn't just a gangster film, it's a really great film. It's just in the genre of drama or action thriller or whatever.
So just quickly, Heath Ledger or Jack Nicholson Joker for you?
I mean,
I love you, Jack, but it's got to be Heath.
I think so. Heath is definitely the more interesting character in performance.
I mean, he's the tone.
But Jack Nicholson
doesn't help that Jack Nicholson
freaking
has
hilarious.
Prince.
It doesn't help. The original Batman, I still kind of like it, but it's dated badly, I think, to be kind.
But Jack Nicholson is awesome in it.
He is awesome in it. He's just hilarious.
And there is a scene in The Dark Knight which is very, very similar.
Exactly, when he's facing
where
him down.
He's like, I want you to hit me.
And
it's the same as when Jack Nicholson's got the gun, kind of, and he shoots his...
He's like, come on, you son of a bitch. Yeah. And he's like that, and it is very similar in a way. And there's a couple of moments that are actually quite along the same lines as the original Batman.
But
in general, it's a very different performance.
Yeah, it's very different. They're as different as they possibly could be.
Yeah.
I think Jack Nicholson is just taking the piss, whereas Heath Ledger creates a real character and a real performance. So,
and up until that point, we hadn't really seen him be. I mean, he's really good in Candy, actually.
Yeah,
but...
and I think Brokeback Mountain is the one.
Yeah, true.
That's what's great about Heath Ledger is those are the two performances you can remember for, but they are entirely opposite. It's like this is introvert and this is extrovert,
and we can all just brush over 10 Things I Hate About You
and
Casanova
and the Four Feathers and all those terrible movies he made.
There's nothing wrong with 10 Things I Hate About You.
It's a bold statement.
I think it's
this
okay.
is going off on the internet, you know.
Yeah,
right?
I don't mind
can't
saying
take
that.
But it's got Keanu Reeves, I mean Joseph Gordon-Levitt.
which we're not going to talk too much about Inception because we've already talked about Inception on the podcast.
It feels like we talk about it every week.
We do. It seems like everybody talks about it every week. But just quickly,
we should mention it.
Inception's good, right?
Yeah,
Inception
good.
Is good. Yeah,
it's not in my top three Chris Nolan films.
It's not his best, and it's not his worst.
Okay, and I would agree with that. So we'll move. Just quickly though, we forgot to do this. Negative things. One line, a negative thing about Memento.
For each one.
Memento,
oh,
go.
Oh, just for Memento. Oh, Memento.
We'll do each one, yeah.
Negative thing. Why'd you choose Memento first for Memento?
Just come up with something.
Negative,
dead air, man.
Negative thing for Memento. Carrie Ann Moss a bit.
I would agree with that.
Carrie Ann Moss's boyfriend in the film is a really bad supporting actor.
Yeah, that character is silly, but he does have that hilarious bit where he's like, oh, what am I doing? Oh, right, I'm fighting this guy.
Why
oh, no, I'm running away.
Why is the champagne here?
Yeah, so that's really good. But I agree with that. That's a good point. Insomnia. Hilary Swank.
I haven't seen it.
I think
Hilary Swank. Yeah, I totally forgot she was even in it.
She's very. Her role is very silly, and it just
is
very
this just going to be like a female character every time?
If that's how it ends up,
the challenge has now evolved. You're not allowed to diss Katie Holmes for Batman Begins.
Oh shit!
Say something bad about Batman Begins.
I say maybe you could argue that some of the one-liners a little bit cheesy.
A little bit cheesy. I think fights. You can't see what the fuck's going on.
Liam Neeson is a little bit too stately and like theatrical as the bad guy for me. Maybe I don't know. Well, and
yeah,
also
I could agree with that.
I can't tell what Ken Watanabe's saying either. So yeah, moving on to the
Prestige.
Yes, bad thing.
Bad thing about Prestige.
It's not female characters.
Yeah, it's Nikola Tesla.
Okay, and the whole sci-fi storyline feeling a little bit.
I actually really like that. So you're wrong.
So screw you.
Yeah. Oh god. Okay, I feel bad about this, but I think when Hugh Jackman's the guy who he's supposed to impersonate. No, wait. when Hugh Jackman's playing the guy they find in the bar to look like him,
mm-hmm. and
they've just given him like a prosthetic nose or something.
Yeah,
and it kind of and he's a bit over the top and a bit silly. And
so
it kind of
the drunk
it's
Hugh
really
Jackman
fun.
Character.
The drunk Hugh Jackman character is quite funny, but it takes away from the okay. rest of the tone of the film.
The Dark Knight. Say something bad about The Dark Knight.
Hey, did you say anything bad about The Prestige?
I did, yeah, didn't I?
No, I don't think you did.
I agreed with you. All right, fine, I'll quickly say something about The Prestige.
Yeah, Louis, you don't get out of this one easy.
I do, because it's my thing and I can run it, so screw you. Prestige, bad something about The Prestige.
Oh, he's going to
fail.
He's
stuck.
Oh,
I'm not going to
fail.
I'm so not going to fail. I felt the emotional, like, the relationships were forced. And it's not the female characters. I feel like, particularly near the end where they said, I fell in love with him and I fell in love with her. I didn't believe that from what I'd seen on screen. I felt that was just cynical.
Yeah, I kind of agree with that.
Yeah,
actually.
I think that's fair. So.
That's quite a major flaw, actually.
Oh, yeah. That was just off the top of my head.
That's
what
we did.
Biatch!
So, The Dark Knight. Something bad about The Dark Knight. I can go straight away. Eric Roberts. He's cheesy and, like, almost irritating.
I want to go next, because I think you two might disagree, but I... And actually, it's a female character, but because you two might disagree, I'm going to disagree anyway.
Okay.
I'm going to say anyway. Maggie Gyllenhaal. Annoying, not that good. Anybody else?
Yeah, I wouldn't say annoying, not that good. I would just say a bit meh.
Yeah.
Because I thought she like, actively annoyed me.
But a twist.
I preferred bring back Katie Holmes.
Bring back Katie Holmes. You must
wow.
be the first ever
yeah,
person to say
no
that.
No one's ever going
to
say that.
Okay, again. Quickly, last thing. Bad thing about Inception.
What did Jamie say about Dark Knight?
Oh, you didn't say anything. Damn it.
Stop. You're getting excited.
I am getting excited.
Okay. Andy Lau wasn't... Not Andy... Whatever his name
the
is.
The Lau character.
Lau guy. Yeah, wasn't that good.
Okay. Ooh, that's a week. But anyway, move on.
Yeah, you suck, man.
I don't know.
Inception. Bad things about Inception.
Bad things about Inception.
There's a lot, I think, actually. Clunky first
exposition.
Out exposition.
Yeah,
that was a who said that first between me and Jamie?
I win.
I think you synchronised it. I don't know.
Lack of real interesting characters other than
I would disagree with that. Maybe like that the it's too many cipher characters. But I think the performances are good. But yeah, the characters are there to move like chess pieces. Perhaps.
Exactly, and I didn't really care about them.
All right, so that'll do it for this week and. That is surely an over hour long. We apologise for that, but we'll see you next week when we'll hopefully be talking about The Kids Are Right, which you guys are going to see, right?
Maybe.
Yeah.
Maybe. Oh, forget it. These guys aren't going to see that, so I'm going to be talking about that by myself. So yeah, we'll see you then, and goodbye.